All right, good morning, everybody. Should have worn a belt this morning. Too much information. So 2 weeks ago, I don't want to hear it, John. I don't know what you said, but just kidding. Have at it. 2 weeks ago, I preached around the fear of God. And one of the things about the people of Israel was that they had a fear of man because they were slaves to the Egyptians and to Pharaoh, and they had a fear of death. And it made it so that they couldn't really trust and follow God fully. And one of the things that God needed to do as a part of having the people of Israel as his chosen people, as his treasured possession, was to bring healing to them in the areas of fear of man and fear of death. And he did that through replacing it with an appropriate fear of God. Today, we're going to be looking at another thing that actually God is needing to heal the people of Israel of, and it's actually bitterness. So in Exodus 1, 14, we see that they experienced ruthless slavery at the hands of the Egyptians, and it said, and made their lives bitter with hard service. So imagine what it was like for the Israelites. They have all this work that they have to do. They have to experience being a victim. They have to experience being oppressed. They have to experience all these hardships and unfairness. And it's made it so that their lives were bitter. And this is something that God is needing to address. And, you know, as we start out today, this morning, I want to ask you, I know that probably the people in this room haven't experienced something as extreme as slavery like the Egyptians did to the Israelites, but are there things that you've experienced that were unjust in your life? Was there ever any oppression that you experienced? Any hardships? And really things that you shouldn't have endured? Abuses and things like that? And even though you know, I don't know every story in here. I know some of the stories in here. And, you know, even as I'm asking these questions, I do it with a heavy heart because I know some of the stories and I know just the incredibly hard things that some of you experienced in your lives. And, you know, I just want to express the heart and the kindness of God in that actually he feels bad that you had to experience those things. It was never his intention and his desire that you would experience those things that you've experienced in your lives, and that actually maybe today, maybe someday soon, there's an invitation where God says, these things that you've experienced, I want to bring healing. For the Israelites, having experienced the brutal slavery that they experienced and the bitterness, so that actually they saw something incredible, right? The Israelites were able to see God doing an incredible miracle, allowing them to cross through the Red Sea. And last week, Pastor Luke preached on the Song of Moses. And having seen this incredible salvation that God worked, made the people of Israel want to just sing out. They wanted to lead out in song and dance to be able to thank their God. But what we see is that the bitter lives that they experienced made it so that just 3 days later, it only took 3 days, they kind of forget completely about the goodness of God and the greatness of God and start to complain and to blame because of the circumstances that they experience. And this is something that can be a limiting factor for us if we also experience bitterness. Dr. Gregory Popcock says that actually bitterness is unforgiveness fermented. Bitterness is unforgiveness fermented. So imagine, like, I don't know if people in here, there's some ties in here. You have like blara, it's that kind of super smelly stuff, blara, that you put in somtam, right? So imagine, like, if unforgiveness is like the fish, bitterness is like the blara that can develop from being fermented and not being addressed. Or, you know, maybe something like naan, you know, that sour pork. You just put pork in a bag with some salt and then you put it out there in the sun for a couple of days and then it just turns into this sour kind of stinky thing. And that's kind of what bitterness is from the difficult things that we can experience. This guy, Stephen A. Diamond, his name's a little easier to pronounce. says, bitterness, which I define as a chronic and pervasive state of smoldering resentment, is one of the most destructive and toxic of human emotions. Bitterness is a prolonged, resentful feeling of disempowered and devalued victimization. Embitterment, like resentment and hostility, results from the long-term mismanagement of annoyance, irritation, frustration, anger, or rage. It's destructive, my friends. If somebody's wronged you, if you've experienced difficult things, and you don't address it, there isn't an opportunity to kind of clear the cache, to just clear out the trash. There's an opportunity for this thing to fester and really impact your lives. So what are the symptoms of bitterness? We'll see in the passage today. One of it is just blaming others. When bad things happen in our lives, when we fail, when we make mistakes, our first instinct isn't to think about, okay, well, what did I do wrong? What should I have done differently? It's to blame other people. It's because of this. It's because of that person. You know, it's because of what my parents did to me. It's because of my teacher not giving me that spot. It's because of that high school coach that didn't let me be the starting quarterback. If coach would have put me in, we would have won state. It's refusing to forgive and let go of past hurts. People have wronged us, and rather than releasing forgiveness, we think about that person every now and again, maybe before we go to bed, and we just remember those painful feelings again. Yeah, man, that guy, if I can ever get an opportunity to get back at that one person, I would love it. Holding grudges, being angry or hostile at the slightest perceived injustices. So you don't get invited to a party and you realize, oh man, I remember what it was like when I was in third grade and nobody let me sit at the cool kids' table. And all of a sudden you feel rejected and you're like, forget those people. Those people are lame. Might have been just an oversight. They might have just forgotten. But actually for you, there's this deep-seated thing. There's this bitterness with that. Even the slightest kind of comment that you think is negative or critical towards you is like, no, who are you to judge me? You can't tell me what to do. You might engage in passive-aggressive behavior. You might not be the type of personality that when somebody offends you, you say, hey, when you said that to me, you hurt my feelings. Can we talk about it and can we reconcile? It's like, oh no, this is another person who actually hurts me and actually doesn't love me, doesn't care about me. And then you go around behind their back and you might make kind of slide, rude comments to them. But most of the time you're kind of in the background talking to other people. You know what she did to me? Right? Like, can you imagine? Can you believe what they did? And you start to gossip and you kind of poison the well around that person's relationships. Like, Timor, did you know what Rachel did to me? What do you think? We become excessively critical, just negative. Everything that comes out of our mouths is this person that did something wrong, that person who's so stupid and just doesn't get things. And every conversation we have, all we do is say negative and critical things about people. We might withhold affection. Somebody is a good friend of yours, they hurt your feelings, and all of a sudden, you ghost them. They send you a message, and you see on your phone alert, Jinda messaged you, and you're like, nah, I'm not ready to talk to her yet. Sometimes you sabotage other people. Sometimes you sabotage your own self. You harbor resentful feelings towards people when they achieve success. Actually, even like your loved ones, people that you love, your friends, your family, they experience something good, and your initial reaction isn't to be joyful and say, wow, that's amazing, that's great, I'm so happy that happened to you. You're always saying, oh, why do they deserve that? I'm just as good as them. I pray just as much as they do. If God loves me, why didn't he bless me like that? And those are the types of feelings that initially you'll get. And you know, the thing is, all of us have people like that in our lives that we've experienced where you say, I think they might have a little bit of some things that they need to deal with. They're bitter. They're just always negative. They're complaining all the time, blaming God, blaming other people. And they are tiresome. It's hard to be around those types of negative people because people start looking around the room, okay? there might be people in this room, but I would think probably mostly not. Can you imagine what it was like for Moses? 2 million people, the people of Israel, they're all people coming out of slavery and the bitterness that they had, and he had to lead them wandering through the desert for 40 years, what it was like for him to have to lead those people. But there's good news, my friends, is that just like there was opportunity for Moses and for the Israelites and for all of us today. God is willing and able to heal us of our bitterness. So let's go ahead and open up our Bibles to Exodus 15, 22 to 25. Remember, this is just 3 days after they're singing songs of God's salvation. Then Moses made Israel set out from the Red Sea, and they went into the wilderness of Shur. They went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink the water of Marah because it was bitter. Therefore, it was named Marah. And the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" Just 3 days later, they come across the only water source, and it's bitter. And now the people are grumbling, and they're complaining. They're blaming Moses. And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log, or a tree, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. Now, the people who kind of are familiar with the desert and the wilderness there, they say there isn't some tree. It wasn't in the natural that there's some log or piece of wood that you can throw into the water to make it sweet. This is another miracle that God has performed. And another thing that he's showing is that actually, if you will listen, if you cry out, I will answer you. And if you listen to my voice and obey and take the actions that I'm asking you to do, I will bring you solutions. And he brings them sweet water to drink. It's another miracle. And you know, the thing is, that particular miracle of the water turning from bitterness to sweetness is an object lesson for the Israelites. Through that, God is showing them, it's a sign of what he's needing to do in the soul of the Israelites. And so after God does that, he continues on, and it says, "There the Lord made for them a statute and a rule, and there he tested them." So it was a test. It was an opportunity to teach them and to be able to test them, saying, "If you will diligently listen to the voice of the Lord your God and do that which is right in his eyes and give ear to his commandments, keep all his statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you that I put on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord your healer." So what God is showing them and what he's testing them in is, hey, I want to heal you. You have these things that need to be healed, but you have to listen to me. There are these rules and statutes that I have, and it's not just simply because I'm like this oppressive, cruel God, like your Egyptian masters, that I'm giving you rules to follow. Actually, no, there's these things that are implications. And at the end of the day, if you want to have a relationship with me, if you want to be my people, this is who I am as a God. This is what I've designed you guys to be. And actually, knowing that, knowing who you are, knowing who I am, and operating your lives in a way that is in line with my design of you is the best way for you to be whole. It's the best way for you to be free of the things of this world and the diseases and the oppressions and things that can come, the darkness that the Egyptians have. And I want you guys to know that it's through obedience to me that I'm going to bring healing into your lives. Now, this is a very common thing that I see as a pastor. We'll see people, they, at first they're like, "I don't know about these Christians. I don't know about their God." But then God will stir in their hearts and we'll see them move closer and closer towards God. And then they go to a place where their hearts are open. And all of a sudden, maybe it's true. Look at all these people worshiping their hearts out with their hands up. Maybe this Jesus is real. Maybe he can really help me. And then we open up our hearts and we actually say, "Okay, Lord, you come and be the Lord in my life. I will believe in you. You are my God now." And then we start to realize, hey, but you know, there are implications on the way that we're supposed to go about living our lives. And then we'd be like, "Oh, wait, hold on. I thought you just loved me and that's it." But you know, God actually loves us as we are, but he loves us too much to just leave us how we are as well. He's constantly thinking about how he might be able to mold us and restore us and change us and make us more whole, make us more like his son Jesus. But we hold on to these things and we're like, "Oh man, the thing that God is asking me for, that seems scary. That seems dangerous. That seems like I'm going to lose my freedom. that seems like I'm going to lose these comforts and these securities that I've learned and that I've acquired over the years. These are the little things that have helped me. I need to have my walls up. I can't really open up completely to my friends. I can't share about my sins to someone else. What if they judge me and they reject me like I've had in the past? God might be inviting you. Hey, why don't you come and spend some time in prayer? Why don't you spend some time receiving counseling? Why don't you open up your hearts and see what might be there, things that are still aspects of the former darkness and slavery that you were living in, that I might be able to bring those things up, not to hurt you, not to make you feel sad, not to just leave you there, but because I want you to follow me and just trust me on this journey of bringing you wholeness and being made more sanctified in the image of Jesus. And you know, the thing is that's really sad about the Israelites, that the slave generation, the old generation that came out of Egypt, they never got it. They spent 40 years in the wilderness seeing God perform powerful sign after powerful sign to say, will you just trust me? Just follow me. Let me lead you. All you need to do is open your hearts up, trust me, and follow me, and I will do good to you. But they never learn, and actually they lose an opportunity to go into the promised land with the new generation that was born in the wilderness. And you know, the particular thing of not having enough drinking water, this is the first of three times that we see in the story of the life of Moses where the Israelites still can't trust God. It's like, no, we're thirsty. We need water. Why aren't you giving us water? And these complaints constantly, even though God shows over and over again that he'll perform miracles to give them water. But actually the third and last time that we'll see in several weeks' time is that it's really bad for Moses. The third time the Israelites complain, it turns out to be really bad for Moses, and he ends up losing an opportunity to cross over with the new generation into the promised land. What had happened to Moses by the end of his 40 years in wandering with these bitter people is that the bitterness of the people of Israelites, he ended up taking on board, and his own spirit became bitter. Psalm 106:32 says, they angered him at the waters of Meribah, and it went ill with Moses on their account, for they made his spirit bitter, and he spoke rashly with his lips. Moses, this chosen instrument, this chosen vessel of God, actually, a person that's described in the Bible as the humblest, the meekest person on the face of the earth. This incredible leader who performed all these great miracles, in the end, he wasn't able to guard his heart, his spirit, from getting embittered because of having to lead the people of Israel. And it made it so that he didn't honor God. He didn't present God as holy. And actually, he lost his opportunity to be able to cross over into the promised land. And so there's a warning for us, both as people that might be harboring bitterness. How many of us would want the things that we've experienced, the hardships that we've experienced, to negatively impact our friends, our brothers and sisters in Christ? You know, that's my problem. I need to deal with God. But it just is a reality that in this walk that we have as Christians is that we don't go alone, and we go with people, and our bitterness can negatively impact other people, and other people's bitterness can negatively impact us, which is why it's incumbent on a community of believers to be able to practice the one another's, to be safe places, like in context of life group, where we can express vulnerability and be able to be open to receiving ministry from one another, that we might together be able to receive the healing that God is wanting to bring for us. Hebrews talks about the dangers of bitterness in the context of a church. Hebrews 12:15 says, see to it that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. Almost like, you know, if somebody has got a piece of bitterness here, it's like a root. And in the context of a church, this bitterness can come out and become expressed and actually sully and dirty the people that are around us. And I can tell you, as a church leader, as a pastor, this is something that we've seen very commonly. What can happen is that actually one person is not happy. They don't like the way that things are being done in the church. They don't like some decision that the pastor has made. Or there may be somebody in the church that's offended them. Hey, They had a social gathering. They had one light at home, and they intentionally chose not to invite me. And then what'll happen is there's this offense. At first it's a hurt, and then it's an offense where, no, that person wronged me. But it's never addressed. And so this thing ferments, it festers. It turns from unforgiveness to bitterness, and it's just, now every time I see that person, I don't feel good every time I don't see that person. And you know what? Every conversation that I have about that person, it's like, yeah, well, if you really knew, they're not as holy as you might think. This is what they did. And then what can happen is that whether it's against the leadership, whether it's against particular groups of people in the church or people in the church, you start to gather like a community of people that share in your bitterness towards them, share in your bitterness towards that person. And this is the kind of thing that God actually does not want to happen. I don't know if you guys, for some of you, probably know some of the things that happened during COVID. And in the United States, I just hear stories. I was obviously here when the whole Black Lives Matter thing happened. And, you know, what was interesting is that in the United States, they told churches, you guys need to close. You guys are not allowed to gather. And you don't want to be this super spreader place. And so a lot of churches had to think carefully and they had to shut their doors. But then in their churches, maybe about half the people were like, yay, good, you guys are being responsible. It's a good job that you guys are closing the churches. But then half the people were like, no, we're not going to let the government tell the church what to do. Like, we should actually remain open and we should still be a place where we can gather, where we can serve people that might be in need. And it was just this weird thing where there were some people in the middle that really didn't care either way. But you had half the people that were very unhappy with the pastors for closing the churches and half the people that were very unhappy with the leaders for not reopening. Same thing happened with Black Lives Matter, with George Floyd's death, is that a lot of the people in the church were angry. Look at the injustice that George Floyd experienced. We need to be marching out there with the Black Lives Matter people. We need to be expressing our hatred of racism, and we need to support the people in this movement. And then the other people were like, hey, you know what? Actually, yes, we understand racism is a bad thing, but you know, the police officers, they were just doing their job, and it's a little bit too much what you're asking us to do. And they were in the same vein, kind of half the people that were really angry, sometimes because the churches didn't do enough, sometimes because they did too much, and there were people on both sides, and there were just a lot of factions and groups of people that just left the church forever, whether it was related to COVID or related to Black Lives Matter. Joy, you were in the States when that happened, right? And this is just a common thing that can happen among Christians. And you know what, though? I will tell you that for any of you that are in here that are in any sort of a leadership position, a pastor, or you lead an organization, whatever it might be, you especially have to be careful. Because when the Israelites had their bitterness inside of them, and actually God is leading them into the wilderness, and for 3 days they don't have drinking water, you know, it's a lot harder to express anger towards God. It's much easier to express anger towards a human being. And you will see over and over again, what the Israelites do when they're unhappy with God is to blame Moses for the way that he was leading them. And we have to be mindful of that as leaders. We don't want to be like Moses, where we allow the bitterness of the people around us to impact us in a way where we become embittered and we end up doing things that are contrary to what God would have us to do. Now, it's a little bit of a joke. I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek. But I know that because I'm the kind of the guy, the leader among the pastors here of our church, although we have a team of elders here, is that I know that I get blamed a lot. And I haven't heard, but I know you guys say stuff about some of the decisions that we make as a church. Why did Dan do that? Why did the pastors do that? These are conversations I know some of you guys are having some of the time. I know you love me deep down, but you know, it's human nature to have those types of conversations. Why didn't he do it this way? Why didn't he let me do that? I know that some of you guys walking up the steps up to the second floor, that last step up to the second floor is a little bit higher and you've tripped and you're like, man, that Daniel, you, why can't he make the steps even? That one actually is a little bit my fault, okay? Because I decided that we would put tile on there and it was going to be a little bit higher than others, and I didn't really think through that decision. But You know, can we just, as people, as Christians, let's be careful about this thing. There's a stern warning about what bitterness can do, whether it's our own bitterness, whether it's bitterness from other people that we are happy to receive, and just the words that we can speak to people where we put bitterness on other people by complaining all the time, being negative and critical all the time, and by blaming people. So let's just be careful, and especially for those of you who are in positions of leadership, just be mindful. Just be attentive. Like, did that sting when you found out that somebody was questioning your judgment or going against the decision that you made? So what's the good news? What's the good news? How do we avoid becoming bitter? And if you've been here long enough at One Light, you know that it's the grace of God. And in Exodus 15:27, what we see, then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they encamped there by the water. You know, last month we celebrated Valentine's Day, and I hope you husbands did something nice, you Western husbands who celebrate Valentine's Day, did something nice for your wives. You know, I personally got Marcia some flowers, but what I like to do is I like to tease her. So what I did was I bought the flowers, and then I hid them in the closet and acted like I forgot that it was Valentine's Day, you know? And so she's kind of seeing other people celebrating, oh, I got these flowers, I got these chocolates for my husband. And then last minute, ha-ha, you thought I forgot, didn't you? And I took the flowers out of the closet and gave it to her. You know, it's a little bit of what God is doing to the Israelites here. As they were leaving the Red Sea, actually God had it in mind to do something incredibly sweet for the people of Israel. I'm going to take you to a place where there are these 70 palm trees and 12 springs of water and all of the shade and all of the water that you need. I'm going to take you to that place. He had that in mind already. If the Israelites would just simply trust and follow. And I don't know how much longer it was, you know. They couldn't wait 3 days. 3 days, and God, you did the Red Sea thing, but now I'm dying of thirst. But if they would have just waited a little bit longer, they would have seen, oh my gosh, a paradise, an oasis, where we can have all of the water and the shade that we need. And this entire thing is an object lesson that God is saying. Will you just trust me? Will you just follow me? Will you just do the things that I'm saying? Like, there was no magic power in that tree, that log. It was simply because Moses obeyed me that you guys had sweet water at Marah. And if you will just follow me, I will bring you through these places of green pasture. There's another person in the Bible who similarly experienced bitterness, and it was Naomi, the mother-in-law of Ruth. And we know that she lost her husband, she lost her two sons, and her friend's like, hey, Naomi, which meant pleasantness. She's like, don't call me cheerful or pleasant. Call me bitter. Call me Mara. It's the same word because of what God has done to me in our lives. And we see that in that story as well. It's the unconditional grace of God. God actually bringing salvation through to Naomi through Boaz, her kinsman redeemer. And then she's able to see a grandchild. She's able to see a grandchild and says, I'm going to name this grandchild Worshipper. And it changed her bitterness into a worship of God because of what God did for her. Another example that we see in the Bible of somebody who actually lived very bitter circumstances was the Apostle Paul. He's somebody that experienced unfairness. He was jailed. He was accused and he was jailed and imprisoned and ultimately ended up losing his life. He actually spent seasons of his life where he was poor. He didn't have all the things that he needed. He also had disciples who he had invested in, churches that he had planted, who deserted him or just left him to be. And he says, I have figured out the secret of being content in all circumstances. I can do it through Christ who strengthens me. And what Paul's encouragement to us, he writes to the Philippians, this is when he was imprisoned already, he says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. In everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. And so what Paul is saying is, hey, it's through the work of Jesus Christ that I have been saved. It's his grace that gives me salvation. But as a Christian, I have a responsibility that no matter what my circumstances are, no matter how poorly I'm being treated, no matter how poor I am, that I'm supposed to rejoice. Rejoice. I'm supposed to be practicing joy. And I'm supposed to be praying, but I pray with thanksgiving. There are these things that God says, hey, do you want to have a peace that surpasses all understanding? Do you want to actually have a guarding of your hearts and your minds against bitterness? But there are these things that God is saying that we have to do. Even scientific studies show, and now it's really big these days among pop psychology, to practice gratitude. But there's something about giving thanks, about gratitude. There's something about releasing forgiveness to people who have wronged you that actually has healing effects on our mental health as well. And you know, for Moses, he threw a tree into those bitter waters to turn it sweet. But there is another tree that actually is thrown into our souls that heals us of our bitterness and turns it into sweetness. Actually, whereas the tree in Moses' story, it didn't really have any significance. But the cross, which gets thrown into our souls, is the source of our gratitude, our joy, and our releasing of forgiveness. We can't not forgive our enemies, no matter how bad the thing that it is that they've done to us. Because we're forgiven, we have to release forgiveness. And no matter how bad your situation is in your life, actually the cross means that we have an opportunity to be in heaven with him forever and ever. There's nothing that anybody can do to steal that away. And of course, Jesus is the one that lived the life that we couldn't live and died the death that we deserved so that we might have an opportunity for eternal life. And how can you, no matter what's happening in your life, not be grateful? And you know, the thing is, in the history of humanity, there was no person more entitled to be bitter than Jesus Christ. No one who experienced more bitter things in his life than Christ himself. He never did anything wrong. Literally, he was perfect. But he was beaten, he was mocked, he was scorned, and he was hung on a tree. And yet he never complained, and he never blamed anyone. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth, like a lamb that is led to the slaughter, and like a sheep that before its shearers is silent, so he opened not his mouth. And when he was dying at the hands of his enemies on the cross, he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. This Christ lives inside of us. There isn't anything sweeter that anybody could have done for us than what Jesus did for us on the cross. And he is the root of our gratitude. He is the root of our joy. He is the root of our peace and living in relationships of reconciliation with the people that are in our lives. And actually, there's no room for any bitterness because of that. I'm going to invite the band to come up. And I just kind of feel like, we were praying upstairs earlier, pre-service prayer, we just kind of feel like Jesus, the good physician, wants to heal some of you of the wounds and of the difficult things you've experienced, the abuses, the oppression that are at the root of some of the bitterness that you might still be carrying to this day. But similar to the thing of needing to take action, like we need to practice joy, we need to practice gratitude. Actually, there's an invitation where God says, come. Don't just sit there with that. Take a step forward. Present yourself to me, that I might be able to point these things out and bring healing to your life. And I just trust as we respond in worship that there might be opportunity for you to be ministered to by God around those things. And if you would like to receive prayer, I would be happy to pray for you. I'll be waiting up front with some of the other leaders. We will have a prayer team with tags on around the room as well. Let's get rid of our bitterness, my friends. And if you are somebody who hasn't put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ yet, I think that there's an invitation for you as well. Imagine the Israelites. Yes, I've seen some of your goodness. I don't know if I can really trust you with my soul yet. That he is a God who is a healer. He loves you. He cares for you. He actually wants to lead you into green pastures. He wants to lead you to paradise and the oasis that he is. So if you haven't put your faith and trust in Jesus Christ, I feel like there's an invitation. Why don't you come forward and receive him?